Super excited for today's guest. Nancy Giacalone is a benefits consultant and the president and owner of Olympic Crest Insurance. So Nancy, thank you so much for being here today. I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background and what you're doing currently with Olympic Crest Insurance.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me today, Nikki. I'm a benefit advisor located in Gig Harbor, Washington, which most of you probably never heard of, but it's about 40 minutes southwest of Seattle. And I founded and still own Olympic Crest Insurance about 25 years ago. And the reason that I did was because I really loved working in the benefits industry. And the agency that I was with previously was merging, and it wasn't really a work environment that I was very fond of, especially with a young son at home, and work-life balance was super important to me. So I decided it was time to start my own agency and do things the way that I wanted to do them. So that's how it began, and it has continued to this day.
All right. Love that. And perfect segue into, I always like to ask our guests, you know, to tell us about your why. What was your inspiration for getting into the insurance world and joining the healthcare revolution?
So that's a really good question. I don't think anyone actually has a good reason usually for getting into insurance of any form. We all tend to fall into it. And then once we're in it, we realize how exciting it can be and how much there is to know and how many people's lives we can really impact. So like many people, I ended up in it by accident, but quickly grew to love it. My why is really about my family, and I really like taking care of people, and not only my family, but my community. And so it's been always very important to me to run my business in a way that honored both my clients, my community, and my family. So that's my why in a short version. And as far as I will follow up, as far as your question about revolution, being revolutionary, that's really something that I think made me so different for a long time that people didn't know what to do with me, because I would look at things and I'd say like, well, it doesn't have to be done that way. Let's try something else. So that's a little bit of my personality type. I tend to think outside the box. And so as the health insurance and the healthcare industry has continued to evolve, I've really grown into that space, and I love being able to impact and affect change.
Yeah, fantastic. And if you aren't following Nancy on LinkedIn, you should be. She's quite the LinkedIn darling. And I can say, as somebody who, you know, didn't have the pleasure of knowing Nancy even 6 months ago, she definitely puts her money where her mouth is in terms of explaining her why and showing her life with her family, her business, and serving the community and just putting good works out into the world. So it's really an inspiration when you see somebody who's doing that. It's the kind of person that you want to be in their circle. So whether that's working or personally or professionally, it's just an honor to know people like you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. What would you say is the key problem that you solve for employer groups that you work with?
Well, first of all, I think the biggest problem that we face is that people need to understand that health insurance and healthcare are two separate problems. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is one problem, health insurance is another problem, and they tend to mix them up. Insurance is simply a financing vehicle. Healthcare is a completely other animal. And when we can separate the two in our minds, especially for employers, they're not so afraid to think about different ways of financing their healthcare, which the results are that oftentimes the experience for the member is better and the bottom line for the employer is better as well. So really helping them understand that those are two separate issues, and then finding the best way to finance the best possible care.
Yeah. And so can you give us any examples, you know, for a business owner who may be in that position thinking like, okay, healthcare and insurance are the same thing. I lump them together. Can you give any examples of people you've worked with in the past, like what they were thinking and where their aha moment was to really understand what you just walked us through, which is one's the financing vehicle. Do you have any examples of people who kind of shared what they were thinking about how they all related together and how you were able to educate them to how it really works?
It's still a challenge. To be perfectly honest with you, it's still a challenge. But I often start with the path of least resistance. So often I will work with employers on self-funding their dental insurance, because dental insurance, again, is a misnomer, essentially a prepayment of a known expense because it's capped. So if you can get them to take that small step forward and they realize that they are giving an insurance company a lot of money for a little benefit, then they start to see the path forward into other lines of business. So almost all of my self-funded clients, we've started someplace easy, like dental insurance, low risk, and they start to understand how it works and it truly is financing. And then we can separate that from the healthcare.
Okay, fantastic. And so, you know, I have a question that you kind of already answered. Do you believe most leaders have a solid enough understanding of healthcare and insurance to make sound business decisions? Well, you've already kind of led with, nope, I don't. So I would love to hear a little bit more from you. The second part of that question, which would be, if you don't have that awareness, what are the risks associated with not educating yourself when it comes to the impact of the rising costs of access to healthcare, insurance, and any changes to the strategy that may be needed in your business?
Well, I think that one thing that's often overlooked is healthcare is often the second largest line item on a company's P&L right next to wages. It's a common fact. It's tossed around a lot, but Starbucks spends more on employee benefits than they do on their beans. So when we think about it in those terms, if you don't start getting your head around what does that line item expense really mean and what can I do with it and how can I make a better work environment for my employees? And also if I can really make a meaningful impact on the cost, I can hire more employees, I can buy a new machinery, I can distribute bonuses, my business itself can become more profitable. But the risk is that when we just treat it like an expense that we're going to look at once a year, we're never going to be able to make a meaningful change. We're always going to be chasing our tail. And it's just a vicious circle. And you've got to get outside the circle if you really want to make a change.
Yeah. So, you know, you walk through the example of self-funding the dental plan. What would be a logical next step if you want to get outside that circle and start walking towards change? Can you give us a few different examples of what that process may look like?
Absolutely. Again, in our industry, we often say crawl, walk, run. And so it's really great to start with an area where there's not too much risk. So for a lot of employers, the best place to start something like that is in a level funded program. And that means that there's a risk sharing between the insurance company and the employer. It's going to look, feel, and smell like a normal plan to the employees. They won't know that the funding is any different, but it gives the employer the opportunity to find out, what are our problem areas? What do our claims look like? Do we need to address the pharmaceutical spend? Are employees going to the emergency room or urgent care too much? And then you can start to move the plan to address problem needs and to expand benefits where maybe they need to have richer benefits to avoid bigger long-term costs.
Fantastic. So there's a whole bunch of different ways. It sounds like it's truly customized based on the business's needs, where they are today and where they would like to end up, what that first, second, third step looks like. Is that the case that you see? It's pretty much customized for the individual business you're working with?
Absolutely. We really do customize it. And we can customize things all the way down to small groups. It might not be the same as what's available to an employer of 200, but a group of 10 still has options. There are so many new things that have come out in the past couple of years that we can do things outside the box. There are, we live in an alphabet soup world in insurance, but there are things called ICHRAs and QCERAs, which are health reimbursement accounts designed to reimburse individual coverage or spousal coverage. And then you can put money inside there as well to incentivize employees if they're interested in direct primary care or cost sharing arrangements. So there's so many different ways to look at the problem. It's not just, oh, hey, here's the Blue Cross solution and it went up 5%, or in this year, probably 15%. Here's your 15% rate increase. Here's the other three carriers and the options. What do you want to cut? Do you want to increase the cost to the employees, or do you want to cut benefits? There's other ways to do it.
Yeah, and I think people want those solutions. You know, those aren't great choices. Do you want to increase the cost or cut benefits?
Right.
If there's another way to go about it, I think most business owners, if you just take emotion out of it, if it's the average of second to fifth, certainly, expense item, that tells the average person that this business owner cares about their employees. If it's one of the biggest expenses in their business is invested in benefits, they want people to have them. But it's almost turned into a landscape where it seems like people's hands are tied, where it's just like, oh, now we've got you where we want you. We will make sure that they are more expensive every year, and you may not even be getting what you want from them.
Right. And I think the other thing too is to remember that, again, when we talk about it, if we talk about the actual insurance piece, it's really financing. And those premiums that are being paid by the employer on the employee's behalf, that's part of the employee's wages. It's all money. And if we start to think about the actual financing as money and the healthcare as something different, and we start asking hard questions about the actual healthcare we're receiving, we have played such a passive role in our own healthcare for so many years as a society. We go to the doctor and the doctor says, okay, well, you need this test, and these three medications. And we nod our heads and say, okay. And we trot out and go get those things done. We don't ask any questions. We don't say, why do I need these medications? Can I treat this through diet and exercise? Are there alternatives? What about this test? How much is it going to cost me? We don't think about that even as consumers. We don't ask the right questions. And so everybody has to get involved if we're really going to make any changes.
Yeah, that's such an excellent point, Nancy. And something that really relates to me. I mean, I've had quite a few medical issues in my life. And I learned to ask really good questions. I learned to actually bring a notebook with me because it was scary things. It's 65 surgeries and procedures, and umpteen doctors have said this is life-threatening. So you want to know what's going on. But they would always be shocked and always comment on it and be like, wow, I wish my patients would do this. So I want to advocate for people that it was so well received by doctors. And they would sometimes like bring me into an office and bring a group of people in. And I know that that's not easy. This was like Rush Pain Center and a neurological teaching hospital. So they're very busy people. And so for three of them to be in a room with me in an office, pull me out of the exam room, shows me that they really cared about answering those questions. And they were not all about healthcare. They were about support system, what to expect with recovery. I lived alone at the time, completely different things that you may not think to ask a doctor. And they were like, this is so important. We want to make this time hang on. So I love that you're encouraging people to ask those hard-hitting questions. Any others that come to mind, just to kind of pepper out there, I thought you asked some really good ones. Just want to see if there's anything else that comes to mind as a starting point for consumers to be taking more control of their healthcare.
I think they really need to ask about their medications. I think that's an area that really people take it for granted. If the doctor says you need it, they want to give it to you right away. I know personally, a couple of years ago, I realized I was like, I'm taking like four pills a day and I'm a perfectly healthy person. What is wrong with this scenario? Mm-hmm. And so I went back to the doctor and I said, I need to get off all of this. It turned out one, I couldn't get off of it. Just, you know, that's just the way things go. But all the other ones I was able to get off of by just making a couple of minor changes, but they prescribe it because most people aren't willing to do those things. So you have to be not only asking good questions, but you also have to take some accountability for your own health and your own decisions. And that doesn't mean that people are responsible for bad health, but if they want their health to be better, they do have some responsibility in owning that and saying, okay, I am going to cut out the fast food, or I'm going to cut down on my sugar intake and try to avoid becoming type 2 diabetic. Or if I've been diagnosed that way, instead of just taking a pill or a shot, can I do something? People need to ask, what can I do to improve my health? And they need to be willing to do it. And they also need to ask doctors when they are prescribing procedures, especially tests, do I need to start there? Do I need to start with an MRI, or can we start with an X-ray? Because oftentimes they can find out everything they need to know with a procedure that's a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the individual, their training, their background, as well as their integrity and their ethics. But at the end of the day, like, they're compensated for the higher ticket value. So there's a very real incentive for them to recommend higher end treatments that may not be the only treatment. So I think it's so smart to ask that. And you know, it makes me think with you talking about, you know, I hear you say taking accountability for your own health. Like, you have some control and you have some influence in this area. And it's just like anything else. Like, I liken it to, I'm really passionate about working out. And part of that's just like, it's a mental health thing for me. I have to have that in my life. I've had movement taken away from me. I've spent a year in a wheelchair. So when you can't move, you value it beyond almost anything else. And at the same time, sorry, Nancy, I've totally lost my train of thought. I'm gonna.
I think your recording's, okay, it's back on, sorry.
Yeah. So at the same time, you know, with that value on movement, a lot of people have asked me, you know, what I do to stay in shape and look to me for advice, just friends and family. And it's really funny the things that they say. They're like, how do you look so young for your age? I'm like, well, I started wearing sunscreen every day in middle school, doing a three-step skincare. I read that you should drink tons and tons of water. So I stopped drinking almost every beverage except for water. I do have wine and champagne occasionally and occasional coffee, but that's it. and worked out 3 to 6 days a week since I was 13. And they're like, yep. Oh, they were like, and the best response I ever got was a girlfriend of mine who said, oh, damn, I was hoping you were going to say you just had a magic pill or something. I'm definitely not going to do all of that. And I was like, at least you're honest and this is yep. money. But that's the way a lot of people want the results and want to be in perfect shape or have a great diet, but are not willing to make the choices and the changes and have the discipline that it takes to experience those things. And I think that's so risky with your health. How can
it's so risky.
Roll the dice? Like you've got family, you want to be, you've got people you love. Don't you want to be here and experience things like your son's wedding? Like if you yeah. don't prioritize your health, you might not be there for those things.
You know, one of my pet peeves, of course, is pharmaceutical advertisements. And they're so geared at making people think that there is a magic pill for whatever condition that they might experience, that people go into the doctor saying, I saw XYZ pill advertised on TV. Do you think that would work for me? And most of the time, the doctors will say, sure, let's give it a try. Now, mind you, if it's being advertised on TV, more than likely the monthly cost is about $5,000 a month or more. I will sometimes sit there and I'll write down all the prescriptions I see advertised in the hour of television. Then I look up the costs and almost without fail, they all run about $5,000 a month. But people don't understand that because they have a copay for their prescription. And so they'll say, oh, well, it was amazing. I only paid $25 a month and I only had a risk of, you know, 20 different side effects, including death. So, but they don't take that into consideration because they see the happy, frolicking family on TV without really thinking the whole procedure through. And when they go to the doctor's so likely to say yes. I think that prescription drugs should not be allowed to be advertised on TV. That's one of my big pet peeves. I think the doctors should be making those decisions or recommendations, let me put it that way, instead of the patient coming to the doctor saying, hey, I saw this on TV, can I have it?
Agreed. Your medication is not like the toy that you're picking up from Target right. for your kids. And it's not an outfit and like, oh, I like this shirt the best. So it shouldn't be something that's driven by, I want to look the way that family looks, right. that's made up, that are paid actors. And I'm passionate about this as well. I guess the initial time I understood this problem was just a kind of a random coincidence. In college, I was in a speech class that was required for the business school, public speaking, and we were just assigned topics. You know, nobody really wanted to do a speech in college, so we were just assigned it, go do it. And it was somewhat of a debate format, so we had somebody arguing both sides, and the topic was about the percentage of funds dedicated to R&D, research and development by pharmaceuticals versus advertising. And we had two different, I was given the position to be opposed to the advertising budget. But by doing that exercise and looking into it, even in my 20s, like I was probably 21 at the time and didn't have a very well-rounded viewpoint on healthcare or insurance. But I remember going to the teacher and being like, this is, excuse me for saying it in my French, but bullshit. Yep. I was like, this is insane. And I don't recall offhand, this was about 20 years ago. So forgive me for not being able to remember. But I want to say it was something so astronomical, like 85% of the budget was dedicated to advertising versus 5% of a budget was dedicated to R&D. And give me a little bit of room there, like 10% or something, but that was pretty much it. Like it was such a minuscule amount is actually spent to developing drugs, testing them, seeing what side effects they may cause, really understanding the long-term side effects. It's just a money-making machine. So I love that you're passionate about that and have seen that. And, you know, kind of winding back a little bit, you mentioned the alphabet soup. I get such a kick out of listening to you talk, because being newer to this industry, it's really helpful for people like me when you kind of back down from the acronym speak. So that's a compliment I wanted to give you. I think you're really good at educating people and speaking in layman's terms. You know, I like to say I know enough, just enough to be dangerous here in the insurance world. but what's the best compliment you've ever received in your professional life, Nancy?
The best compliment that I would say is that I have a high level of integrity, I care deeply, and I do what I say I'm going to do.
Yeah, well, it doesn't get much better than that. That's a pretty good testament to your character. On the flip side of that, you know, with being part of the healthcare revolution and being in a disruptive field, there's always people who don't appreciate people who are changing the status quo. So are there any insults that you've received that you're actually proud of?
Oh, yeah. I've been told multiple times people don't really like me. And I've had people say that to my face. And they're like, well, they don't really like you. And I'm like, why? I'm like, I'm super nice. Why don't they like me? And they're like, well, because you're so focused. So that tends to be, especially with females. And I've been doing this a long time, Nikki. I mean, I started in this industry when I was 23 years old, and people didn't know what to do with a young female in this industry who was actually not you know, an assistant or working for a carrier, but was actually an advisor at that age. And so I got a lot of things thrown at me, and I just kind of let it roll off my back. And I know that if I'm doing the right thing, sometimes that's going to bother people, and that's okay. So I'm okay with that.
I love it. You and I couldn't be more similar on that. Like, I sometimes actually like to intentionally piss people off. Yeah. If you're really confident in what you're doing, then let them hate. And at the end of the day, haters are often your bigger supporters. So
yes,
you know, they may not be actively supporting you, but they're probably reading what you're saying and watching what you're doing and listening to what
you do. They do.
Yeah. So he'll take it. Haters gonna hate. What's something about the world of insurance that caught, you know, having had so much experience in this landscape, that caught you completely off guard?
I think once I'm going to go back to pharmaceuticals one more time. I think once I started understanding how much gamesmanship there is in the pricing of pharmaceuticals, I still can't even believe it. I can't wrap my head around it. The shadow pricing, the rebates, the script fees, all the ways the pharmaceutical industries and the pharmacy benefit managers and the health insurance plans and the pharmacies are kind of in this secret society that does not benefit anyone except for themselves.
Yeah. Amen. I mean, I have a LinkedIn post going up later today with a flicking off emoji that is from hospitals and healthcare, because that is what they are saying to us. They do not care about you as an employer group, you as an employee, you and your family. It doesn't matter. They just want your money. In fact, it's actually one of the only things I've seen where everybody's treated the exact same. I mean, from a diversity and inclusion standpoint, it's wonderful. It doesn't matter what race, what gender, how much money you have. They just want your money. And they will
treat you
like somebody that they want to take money from. And so we're all the same in that boat. And it's kind of beautiful, even though it's super, super unfortunate.
Yeah. You know, and one of my other pet peeves, and this isn't really on the insurance, but more on the healthcare side, is if you call a doctor's office, and maybe not you, because you've, you know, they probably know you well, but if you call a doctor's office to ask, can I speak? If you call the doctor's office to schedule an appointment, their first question is, what insurance do you have? Before saying, how are you today? What's going on? What's the problem? They don't even ask that question. They want to know what your insurance is before they want to even know your name. And I find that so disappointing, because that's not what healthcare is supposed to be.
Yeah. And even, you know, the trickle down effect of like conditioning us to just be like, okay, like feel like we don't deserve anymore. Because the flip side of that is I've seen people experiencing, you know, significant mental or physical health challenges and needing treatment and not being able to work through insurance hoops. And I'm like, hey, you've got some money in the bank. Like, why don't you just go get this treatment? This is really vital that you take care of yourself. Be a cash pay patient, or work through it with insurance on the back end, right? And get it reimbursed. Like, just don't put it, like, I see people putting off for months sometimes treatment that is really, really needed and could save their life or improve the quality of their life over insurance headaches. And I'm like, why did we get to a point where we're like, okay, I need this, and I pay a lot of money on a monthly basis to have this thing that's supposed to help me, but it's actually harming me. And now at this point, the treatment I need now needs to take place in 4 months from now, and it may be too late. And
right.
To what end? It's like there's no end to the scam. in my opinion, I think that, yep. I think it's a scam.
There's a lot of it. I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah. So given that I am newer to the insurance world and you've got such a wealth of experience, what's something that I should ask you that I may not know enough to ask you yet?
Oh gosh, that is a good question. I think that the biggest, and it's not even a question, but I think that anybody coming into this industry, there is so much to know. It can be overwhelming, but always try to learn something new about our industry every single month. Because after 35 years of doing this, I learn something new about our industry every single month. I make it a point to research one thing that I may or may not understand as well as, you know, somebody else. I try to be as well informed as possible. Do I do it all? No, I do not do it all, but I try to at least understand it well enough so that I can recognize an opportunity and then direct somebody in that direction if I'm not the right person for them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I love the way you answered that, because I think it just really tells the story of the huge value that a benefits advisor provides. Like, you're somebody who spent 20 years on a monthly basis researching in depth and educating yourself. And that's something I'm really passionate about with my background leading divisions and having P&L responsibilities and making some of these choices. If you're a business owner and you're not in this field, you probably don't have the time and the resources to educate yourself to this degree.
Not.
And certainly your HR person who's there to support the people of your organization, not be an insurance expert, doesn't have time to take this on. So I'm glad you answered it that way. And maybe you can expand upon that a little bit, you know, in terms of being that advocate for the employer groups that you work with and being able to bring all of this information to their fingertips, so that they can make the right decisions and make sure that they're doing things that are in line with their business needs. How would you say, sorry, Nancy, so what do you think is the biggest challenge that HR managers face with benefits communication?
Well, that's a really good question, because the HR managers definitely face a different set of challenges than business owners, because they're usually the face of the benefit program to the employees, yet they don't really have a deep knowledge of the programs. So HR people really need to be working with a good benefit advisor and benefit advisory team, because we are the extension of their department. We formulate the communication plan. We break it down so that it is plain English and it is not an alphabet soup of acronyms. We take it old school with some of our clients. I mean, I started making poster boards and taking them in, and it's like, what's a deductible? And then we do a little education around that. And then at the end, we pose different scenarios and then give out gift cards for people that got the concept, because we have gotten so tech forward in the insurance industry, which is good. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But we tend to forget that we're dealing with people. It doesn't matter how great our system is, we're dealing with people, and they need to understand the concepts before the technology works for them. So remember that it's people and their real problems, and those HR people have so much on their plate. They don't have the time or the resources to know everything about the benefit programs, as well as options that we can talk to individuals about. Maybe somebody should be on Medicare. Maybe somebody can get prescription drugs less expensively through GoodRx or through a manufacturer's coupon program. So when they work in conjunction with a good benefit advisory team, they can provide such a higher level of service to their employees, and they can focus on some of the other parts of their job, which are overwhelming, to say the least.
Yeah, 100%. And there's no worse feeling. Like I want to give kudos to anybody who's in HR listening. Like their passion for people in their role just often radiates through who they are. Like I think that most people who go into that have a true calling, but there's nothing more frustrating than when you have a true calling of service to be like, I want to serve and I want to improve job satisfaction and come through for my teams, but I'm tasked with this monster project that I really don't have the wherewithal, not the wherewithal, but the knowledge, the time, the money, and the resources to tackle. It's kind of a soul sucking proposition. Say, okay, well, I have to do it and just check that box and do my job and get through this open enrollment. But I don't really feel like I came through for my people the way that I could have with this particular thing or all of the other things that I would like to be doing for them. And I really feel for my contacts in HR when they're going through that. And I love that people like you and Olympic Crest Insurance can come in and kind of take that burden off for them and really help
because
them.
Because that was the word I was going to use, is they do tend to see open enrollment as a burden. It's one more thing on their plate to have to deal with. They're not benefit experts, nor should they be benefit experts, but they're still in that role. And so the more that all the benefit advisors out there can support HR instead of overlooking HR, I think the better the experience is for everyone.
Yeah. And speaking of experiences, do you have a favorite customer experience, whether that's employer group as a whole, or even just an employee from a group that had like a total aha moment, just an experience story that you can share with our audience when they have this level of engagement and education that you provide? I typically see some really beautiful stories and feedback coming from that. And I would love anything that you could share with us.
Well, I'll use my most recent one. And it goes back to when we created those little poster boards. It was an automotive shop, mostly young men, probably between 25 and 35. Most of them had never had insurance before. The employer is paying for the 100% of the cost of the program. And we wanted to make sure that they could really understand the value of what they were getting and how it was going to work. And so, like I say, we created these poster boards, and at the end, we had questions. Okay, if you were out on your motorcycle and you fell and broke your arm and you had to go to the emergency room and then you had a prescription, what are your costs going to be? What is it going to cost you? And how much is the insurance going to pay? They got it like that because we took it back and made sure that we covered the fundamentals. We didn't talk in fancy insurance speak. We just said, here's how it works. We want to make sure that now that you have this new benefit, we want to make sure you know how it works and you're not scared to use it if you need it. And when we got done, the owner and the HR person, they were like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that they would understand it as well as they did, or that they would be so appreciative. And I got a really nice call from them a couple of days later. They're like, our employees just kept coming up and thanking us for doing this for them. That doesn't happen very often. So it was really cool.
It doesn't. And hats off to you. Like, that's a really awesome moment of impact and showing the impact that partnering with the right benefits advisor can bring. I mean, you mentioned like know how it works and how to use it. And my thought goes to, if you're a business leader who cares about their people and there's nobody in your organization who can answer those questions for your people, that's the disconnect. You have a real problem that you may not be aware that that's a problem, but it is. And we're all struggling to attract and retain the right talent in today's climate. So making sure that people are getting benefits that they value and really understand what they're getting and what the value is a huge part of the strategy to retain that top talent.
We always have to look at it through the eyes of the member or the employer. If we look at the problems through our own eyes, we can see how to get it done, but we don't see how they're going to feel it and how it's going to be perceived. So I think it's really important that every piece of communication we do, we have to look at it. Would I understand this if I didn't know anything about insurance? And if you can do that, then I think you're well down the road.
Well, that is what I'm staking my name on, is that I'll never know everything, but I know it well enough to explain it to the layman. Yep. Because that's all that matters. Like, most of us don't, in terms of employer groups, employees, users, I welcome the education and knowledge that you have, Nancy, and being able to kind of understand the breadth of knowledge that you have. But that's what I'm passionate about, is getting the word out that, hey, you don't have to spend 20 years doing this. There's people who already have this information and are really good people. Nancy's character and integrity jumps through the screen and through this microphone. And so you can see, like, she's the type of person that you can trust, and they're out there, and take advantage. Nancy, what are a few accomplishments that you're most grateful for along your journey? And these can be personal or professional.
Well, as I mentioned, I started my own business 25 years ago. I still own it. As you know, most businesses fail within the first 5 years. Most of them fail in the first year. 25 years later, I'm still going strong. And I think really in conjunction with that, and it kind of brings it full circle to the question you asked me in the beginning about my why, is I have always kept my focus on what's most important. And yes, I love having my own business and I love making an impact. But if I'm going to do those things at the expense of my family, then it's not working for me. So I've always been able to keep that perspective on that. And for me, that meant that when I was younger and my son was younger, I didn't grow my business as fast as I could have, because I knew where I needed to be and what I needed to do. I still worked a full-time job, but I kept it in balance. I wanted to go to those field trips. I wanted to be able to go into a classroom and spend time and see him growing up. I wanted to be a part of his life. I didn't want to be checking in for a couple hours every night. So above it all, that's the thing I'm most proud of.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And congratulations on having a successful
company. Thanks, and I almost just made myself cry.
I know. You know, you should cry over stuff like that. Like that's the American dream, is creating a career for yourself that is there to support your family, but is flexible and allows you to be there to support your family in other ways other than financial. Because, you know, I think, again, my personal take is that as a society, we've gotten so conditioned to only think about what does our financial stability look like. And we're not putting enough emphasis on all of the other things that really make us happy and whole human beings and raise other happy and whole human beings. So it's really touching to see that you prioritize that, and that you're putting more, I'm sure, more great people out in the world, because people who are raised by people who really care and took the time to be a part of their lives tend to go out and do good things in the world. So kudos to you. It's making me emotional too. All right.
I didn't mean to be sappy, but all of a sudden it was kind of overcome with it.
I'll try to lighten the mood. I was thinking, as you're saying, I'm sorry, was it 23 or 25 years? I missed the number of years Olympic
Christmas. I've had my business for 25 years.
25 years. All right. Well, the only thing I could think of was Legally Blonde, when they're all like, snaps for Nancy.
I love it.
Yeah. So snaps for you. All right, Nancy, is there any other questions that you wish I'd asked you today? And if so, how would you have answered them?
Let me see. I actually had, I think, again, more than anything else, the question that I wish is just to remind people, it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to ask questions of your doctor. It's okay to ask questions of your benefit advisor. It's okay to ask questions of your employer. If your health plan, if you're concerned about it, it's okay. Don't be disrespectful, but ask the questions if you want to know and you want to understand things better. I think that's the thing that gets us in more trouble than anything else. Is we're embarrassed, and so we don't ask the questions that we need to.
Agreed. And it's so freeing. Like, I would much rather, I mean, once you know, like, knowledge is power. So, and just think about it from the flip side. Like, I think every one of us, for the most part, maybe we're having a bad day, but like, loves when somebody asks something that we're passionate and knowledgeable on. We're like, here, let me tell you. And now you know, and go tell someone else. But we just get in our own heads, and we're like, they're all going to laugh at me.
We do. We very much get in our own heads about that.
Yeah, we all do. And it's just a silly thing that we need to put down. Before we wrap up, I always ask people on this, since it's a topic about people who are making a revolutionary difference in their field. Nancy, what does being revolutionary mean to you?
Again, I'm going to go back to the things that I'm most proud of about myself. It's saying what you think, doing what you believe, and then following through on that. So you really have to be willing to take a stand, because being revolutionary is not easy. It is not for the faint of heart. You have to be very committed to your beliefs, and you have to be committed to making a change for the better.
I feel like that's just a mic drop moment. I don't want to have all that noise, but I'm pretending to drop a pen. All right, well, please tell everybody listening where to find you and where they can reach out for more information, Nancy.
So you my website, Olympic Crest Insurance, olympiccrest.com. I'm very active on LinkedIn, so you can find me there. Once you find me, you might be sad because I will keep showing up in your feed, but feel free to contact me there. You can also email me, nancy@olympiccrest.com. I'm happy to talk to anyone and everyone that has questions about benefits, health insurance, how to get into the industry, how to get out of the industry. I'm very passionate about mentorship, and I'm also passionate about helping other women rise up in this industry. So give me a ring.
Yeah, I encourage you to do so. Nancy's quite the dynamo. If she didn't make an impression on you today, then you must have been sleeping. So, but Nancy, thank you so much. Thank everybody for listening, and have a great day.
Thank you, Nikki. I really appreciate the opportunity.